Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you if Dak Prescott or Jason Garrett is under more pressure in Dallas.
And if Laker fans should be encouraged about LeBron's Lakers. But we start today with a Whitlaw like every day. What you got today, Big Dog?
Oh, I've got some Eli Manning. In a 23-20 loss to the Atlanta Falcons last night, Eli Manning threw for 399 yards, a touchdown, and zero interceptions. My man Booger McFarland, the Monday Night Football broadcaster, spent much of the night subtly criticizing Manning. This morning, a writer for the NFL Network said Eli played poorly despite his gaudy statistics. A writer for NewJersey.com called for the Giants to bench Eli. Bleacher Report whined that Odell Beckham Jr. isn't reaching his potential because of Eli. There seems to be universal agreement among the media that Eli Manning is the reason the New York Giants stink. Virtually any time there's a universal opinion held in the media, that's a key indicator a lie is being told, a narrative has been rigged. Human beings disagree. It's what we do naturally. Groupthink is a man-made social media-enhanced disaster.
Message.
The negative groupthink battering Eli Manning's reputation is orchestrated by the social media forces determined to elevate Odell Beckham Jr.'s standing in professional football. OBJ is what Silicon Valley-obsessed media want the face of professional football to look like. Emotional, sensitive, fashionable, less masculine. Eli represents the patriarchy. He's old school. He's legacy NFL. He's the son of Archie and the little brother of Peyton. Let me be clear. I'm not suggesting that Booger McFarland or a writer at the NFL Network is part of some plot to elevate OBJ. What I'm saying is that all of us in the media want social media traction. Our bosses evaluate us on followers, likes, and retweets. We're addicted to the interaction we get on our smartphones. OBJ is the king of NFL social media. He has nearly 12 million Instagram followers and nearly 4 million Twitter followers. Eli is OG, not IG. Mm. He's not on Twitter or the gram. My point, there's no social media downside to criticizing Eli Manning. There is no Eli hive waiting to attack you if you go too far or over the top in your criticism of the two-time Super Bowl winner. Zzz. OBJ has a very active Beckham hive. Everybody in the media knows this. My argument is that a lot of the Eli criticism is nothing more than honey put on display to attract the bees from the Beckham hive, or it's bug spray to keep the Beckham hive from attacking. The only fair assessment from last night's game is that the Giants' offensive line is absolutely horrible. It's so bad that on a night when Eli was able to connect with Beckham and Sterling Shepard downfield, the New York offensive line still couldn't open consistent running lanes for a sensational rookie running back, Saquon Barkley. Eli played at a winning level. The Giants' offensive line did not. The nonstop assault on Eli's reputation is unfair and a reflection of social media's power to undermine honest discourse. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Tony Gonzalez and Mark Schlereth. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes.
I believe the over-the-top criticism of Eli is unfair. What do you say?
I hear you. I don't hear that Booger McFarland has something subtle to say when your name is Booger. guess what? Nothing subtle about Booger on Monday Night Football. But I understand where you're coming from, and I respect it. However, Eli is playing the most important position in football, maybe the most important position in sports, in terms of it's not just based on production, but inspiration. That position has to have energy. That position has to go beyond the numbers. And what I see from Eli is not adequate numbers, not adequate production. Last night,
399 yards.
Yeah, one touchdown. We get judged by points, not necessarily how, between the 20s, but respect. And more importantly, the missed opportunities, the frustration that has now been muted in Odell Beckham Jr. from the conversation he had with John Mara and his public statements about Odell. And you can still see that growing frustration, Odell knowing he's open on the same play they practice all week long and not getting hit on target.
8 for 143.
Pace. Respect. And guess what? Odell is a guy who's at an NFL record pace in terms of production. So when you say 8 for 143, Odell wants to see that every single week at minimum. Beyond the missed opportunities, beyond the lack of energy at the position, I see Eli Manning not stirring the pot as the team leader and facing this franchise for so many years and saying, hey, guys, rally behind me. Not only my production, but by my leadership. And if you put all those things together in that gumbo, it leads to all the criticism of Eli Manning.
You know what's interesting about the whole leadership aspect of this? Remember when Eli came in the league initially and it was like, this guy doesn't have enough juice. There's no energy. He's like Eeyore. And then he wins some championships, and it's, oh, the guy has ice water in his veins.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
His personality never changed. Right. That is who he is. I think you look at this team in general, and all you have to understand is on a fourth down play, to go in to score, they chose to try to throw it as opposed to giving it to number 26. Wasn't that, like, wasn't
you're
that
talking about the
was it the
they ran some quarterback sneaks late?
Quarterback
too.
Sneaks, two of them.
Yeah, right.
And horrible.
And my issue is you're telling me all I need to know if I read the tea leaves about what you think of your team. Our offensive line blows. Mm. We're not any good.
Yeah.
Now I understand this from a player standpoint. There comes a time in everybody's career that you don't want to be hit anymore. Eli is there, right? I mean, there comes a time where
not last night.
But he played well. The concern to me though is the plays you don't make. Like, that's the concern for Eli. Like, they run that flat combination with it's a layered route with a flat to OBJ, gets his head around. It is wide open.
Yes.
That's the first read in the progression. 100% of the time, you got to throw that, and you choose, for whatever reason, not to throw it. There's a couple slants that are wide open in the middle of the field where your timing is off. I think your timing is mostly off because you don't trust the guys in front of you. Hmm. So it's sped up your mechanics. But I think the bigger issue is not Eli. I think the bigger issue, you spent $15 million on a left tackle who suddenly forgot how to block, and you don't have an offensive line that can protect your quarterback adequately. And as we get older, shoot, I don't know about you, Tony, but I was like, yeah, I'd rather not pull and have that collision. That's just me, you know. That's where I was.
Tap absolutely. Out. And you know, that brings up the point. That's the point I want to add to this conversation. Yeah, Eli missed some plays. But I think we have to – and yes – because Eli is getting older, it's clear that he's winding down. I would not be surprised if he retires at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because his lack of production, Odell Beckham cannot make those one-handed catches anymore. He's not doing that flashy stuff. He did it last night. I mean, he dropped
a two-point conversion.
He dropped a two-point conversion, but we want to see Odell Beckham do this type of stuff. He wants to see himself do this type of stuff. Jerry Rice, when I was in the league and I was winding down my career, I could see it coming. I was on a bus with Jerry, and I said, hey, Jerry, when do you know it's done? And he said, well, I'm going to tell you about me, the way I look at it. He goes, play till the wheels fall off. And I started thinking, and then I went to I talked to Warren Moon about it, and he's like, look, you probably should get out whenever you can. But he played till the wheels fall off. They had to cut mm-hmm. him out of the league. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm going to walk out. I made a decision to walk out on my terms, okay? I went to a Pro Bowl and still retired. This is what happens. When you decide to play till the wheels fall off and you go past your prime and it's over, the wheels fall off and you're going to get cut out of the league. And a lot of these guys that you have to make that decision as a player, it could happen to LeBron James eventually. It's going to happen. It happened to Peyton Manning. He was not the same player. And I think right now Eli is not that two-time Super Bowl champ anymore. He cannot make the throws like he used to. That those quarterback sneaks. He's got to be one of the worst athletes in the NFL right now.
Ever.
And that's not a knock against him. He's getting old.
Eli's tires have been slashed. by that offensive line. Seriously. And again, I'm not sitting here saying Eli's a Pro Bowl quarterback, but I watched last night's game. And for people to come out of that game, oh, Eli stinks, Eli's in the way of Odell, that's just not true based on what happened last night. Eli stood in the pocket several times and took some hits. He got rid of the ball before the rush got there. But that offensive line from start to finish that entire game was horrible. Anytime you had that kind of downfield passing and you got that kid in the backfield, Saquon Barkley, and you can't open up any line, any holes for him on a consistent basis, that offensive line is horrible. We've gone too far with the shredding of Eli Manning.
You think he's slick. I just heard you, too. In a vacuum, you just said, last night, Eli.
Yeah, last night.
This criticism's been going on for years of Eli. You wanted to halt because of one game? You're based on your record. You're based on your resume. And let's name some facts off of Eli's resume. Since he got into the league, he leads the league in turnovers, interceptions. And by 35 interceptions is second place. He leads that guy. Since 2013, 35th. In completion percentage, 38th in passer rating. Last time I checked, there are only 32 teams. So that means some guys who don't even play that often get it out of there and perform better than Eli Manning in major statistical categories. The thing about Eli that is really damning right now, if you look at this, is he's in a position where he knows it's over in terms of his greatness is behind him, right? And he knows from his brother's experience the best offensive lineman you could ever have is the quarterback. I played against Peyton Manning year in, year out. Outside of Tariq Glenn, give me the rest of those guys every single day. Send a limo, make sure they show up. Oh, I forgot. Peyton Manning's the quarterback. He's going to get rid of the ball. He's going to make the smart read. On that slant route, he's going to hit him in progression, in pace, in stride. And Eli continuously misses those. And then we're going to blame Odell, who saved Eli's career by giving him the energy
again,
and juice.
I'm not blaming Odell. I'm blaming the offensive line. I personally know some of the Colts linemen during the Peyton Manning era, and they were a little bit better than what you're giving them credit for.
I will say this. One thing that ends up happening to you is the timing of routes and route progressions are all tied to the drops. And if you get to the point where you speed up your mechanics because you don't trust as a quarterback that your offensive line is going to be able to protect you, that timing of those route combinations and the throw of that quarterback is just going to be off. And that's where you see some of the inaccuracies that he has over the last couple of years.
I'm going to take his whole career in totality.
Oh, let's go.
At no point did I ever watch Eli Manning and go, he's that dude. He's one of the three or four or five best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, that's real.
He's always been spotty. So you can list all his career interceptions, turnovers. That's who Eli has always been.
Yeah.
He's never been a guy that's carried the team. He was never his brother. And so all I'm saying is now we reach this point where, oh, my God, the New York Giants. And I'm watching the guy that every time he takes two steps back, there's almost a defensive lineman mirroring his steps into the backfield. It's you can't function. No quarterback can function with that little pass protection, that little run support from the running game. It can't happen. And so Eli played a very good game last night for Eli Manning. And for people to come out of this game as if last night was some proof that he's either holding the team back or Odell Beckham Jr. back, that's a joke to me.
Okay, let me apologize. I didn't play D-tackle. Jeff Saturday was a beast. But other than that, but the rest of them dudes.
They had a guy named Ryan Lilger.
Really?
He was very good. Trust me. He's from Kansas City. I followed his career.
I can tell he's from
you
Kansas
played
City.
Against him. You played
against
him.
I can tell he's from Kansas City. The way you just gave him props like that. Oh, he may have been really good, but Glenn was the only one. You're basically going with the argument that he's been inconsistent his entire career.
Absolutely.
So why are we now exaggerating his inconsistencies? I think it's because he got exposed after he got energized by Odell. When I throw the life raft out there in terms of NFL production at a record level at the receiver position, and Eli all of a sudden starts to get a little jolt of energy and plays well for games within the last 3 years, and then Odell with his injuries and last year missing so many games, it exposed Eli even more so, especially when the wheels are falling off. I think that's where
tires slashed. His tires have been slashed more than they've fallen off. Welcome back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Tony Gonzalez and Steelers legend James Harrison. All right, let's move to some big stories, starting with the Cowboys, where ESPN's Josina Anderson is reporting that the Cowboys are trading a first-round pick to Oakland for wide receiver Amari Cooper. The Cowboys' receiving corps has struggled all year, so adding Cooper could provide a much-needed downfield threat. The fire sale continues in Oakland.
Yeah.
But I love this move for the Cowboys and for Dak Prescott and for Jerry Jones. These guys are all in. They feel like the NFC East is still out there to be had. I think this is a tremendous move. They've needed a number one receiver. Now they got one. No more excuses for Dak or that offense.
Yeah, I really like the move in terms of giving a guy the breath of fresh air. Amari Cooper, you know, two great seasons and two not so great seasons by his own standard that he set. It's going to be interesting, though, because now the pressure shall shift solely on Dak Prescott. If you watched the game yesterday, Tony Romo continuously pointed out how lazy Dak's eyes were in some of the routes and some of the reads, despite having one of his better games. Yeah, oh yeah. Right here, slant route, Cole Beasley.
No, you're right.
It was a few times, yeah. And I was like, Romo's in a tough position, because how critical can you be of a guy for the franchise he used to play for, et cetera. But all that said, he's going to be the best receiver they got. Now you put Cole Beasley in his proper spot as the number two, offense can open up.
First of all, I look at it from both sides. First of all, everything that I've been saying about Gruden, this is part of it, okay? This is part of that routine that I think it's that New England Patriots. We're getting rid of all of our players. We're going to stack these first-round picks. We're going to hit Vegas with this new team. In about 2 or 3 years, you're going to see the Raiders at the top of the NFL league. That's what I believe. Mm-hmm. But going back to the Cowboys, what this does for them, yes, it adds that receiver. Remember Cole Beasley came out a couple weeks ago saying, hey, watch the tape. We're getting open. So it doesn't matter if you're getting open or not. Dak still has to hit you. And this is my thing about Dak Prescott. We need to recognize who this player really is. He's not that pocket passer. I think he is that guy. He is a poor man's version of Cam Newton, where he has to use his legs to win. You look at his stats. When he has more than 7 carries, they win. They win. He's undefeated. He's never lost. So great move, great receiver. I think it's still going to help the team no matter what. But at the same time, we have to accept who Dak is, and he has to shift his game to more like Cam Newton if this is going to be successful.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Dak is not going to be that pocket, you know, quarterback that's going to sit there and get you 300 yards, 350, you know, a game, and, you know, hit guys, you know, with laser shots here and there everywhere across the field. He's a guy that, you know, he needs a running game behind him so that he can, you know, be able to sit back, do the play action, get that long ball out there, and, you know, be effective for that team. But this will be a great move for the Cowboys.
Here's what both of y'all are missing, and you just hinted at it. Dak needs a running game, and the offense needs a running game. And if you watch that game yesterday, they need someone to stretch the field to get those safeties out of the box.
Right.
Zeke Elliott was very ineffective yesterday. The Redskins bottled him up rather easily, and I think that's what this move is as much about, providing Dak some help, but also providing Zeke some help with a guy that can get those safeties out of the box.
Yeah, same thing happened in New England with Josh Gordon and him just getting on the field. All of a sudden, you see him 4 consecutive games, 38-plus points. Mm-hmm. Why? Even if Josh Gordon's not going off, it's just the threat, just the fact that now he affects what you think is coming from the offense. So I think he can have that same effect here, but I'm more with Tony. Like, the exposure of Dak Prescott may occur because of this move. That may be the unintended consequence, but
why couldn't it be the blossoming or the
re-blossoming? It could be. That's why I use the word could. But the thing is, Dak Prescott, 39 games. We saw 3 games over 300 yards, and we saw 16 under 200. Hey, that's not so good. And now you're going to have a guy who's going to sit there and expose either A, you can't give me the ball, or B, even with me here, we're not good enough. Who's that going for?
I'm going to look on the more positive side. And, I mean, you guys are all highly experienced NFL players. But Dak Prescott's in his 3rd year. This is the year when he's supposed to reveal himself. Mm-hmm. And they took all the tools away from him. True. And Jason Witten, Dez Bryant. Now they just gave him one back. And regardless of whether Amari Cooper is a superstar coming in or a true number one, just the threat of him and what he's done in the past should help Dak out.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I feel exactly the same way, but it comes down to, I believe you have to get that run game going for him to be effective. He's not a guy that's going to just sit in the pocket and kill you. You know what I'm saying?
The great thing about this trade is that we're going to find out.
We're going to find out.
Because he's got no excuse, and they need to find out. They actually, the more I think about it, they needed to make this trade because Dak's coming up on that contract, right. Okay? Am I really going to put $30 million in this man's pocket
and he can't throw for over 250 yards in a league where you're supposed to throw over 250 yards. That's the benchmark as a quarterback. You have no excuse now. You have no excuse now. This is a. I think it's a great move by the organization. Let's see who you really are now, Dak, because now we've given you some tools.
Man, y'all talking a lot about Dak, but there's another guy that I think gets a lot of pressure now, and it's Jason Garrett. So, to me, if you watch that game yesterday, that was a coaching disaster by Jason Garrett. And, you know, look, I know the penalty they called on the long snapper or the field goal snapper, that's what everybody's talking about. But to me, the way Jason Garrett handled that in-game situation, they weren't aggressive at all. Mm-hmm. Everything he did was about setting up for a 45 to 48-yard field goal. And I'm, are you kidding me? I'm looking at guys all around the league miss extra points and things like this, and this guy's very comfortable kicking a 48-yard field goal and wasting time on the clock.
Well, everything that they say, you know, Jerry Jones, you know, the head Garrett, you know, they're saying that this is their quarterback. You know, they believe this is their franchise quarterback. But everything that they do is, you know, as far as allowing him to go and show that he's that guy, says something totally different. The play calling doesn't show it.
Yeah, you talk about those waning moments and having the ball that close to scoring a touchdown, but you then all of a sudden pump the brakes and make sure you stay conservative. And no team should have full confidence in kickers this year, it seems like. I mean, maybe it's an anomaly, but this year it just seems like kickers all the time. We saw Justin Tucker.
Yeah.
What? He never misses an extra point. Yeah. First ever. So I look at it like Jason Garrett is an issue, but the refs were really the problem. Think about this. The refs just penalized a long snapper for going through his routine. And you don't think that's correct. Watch how the next play after the penalty, after the infraction, he does the exact same thing and no penalty. So hold on, referees. Can you at least be enlightened to what I do pre-snap? Because there was nothing sudden about it, nothing dramatic, and nothing with intent to draw off the defensive lineman. But shout out to Jonathan Allen, as we're all taught as defenders, they give you anything to take advantage of. Take advantage of it and be the best actor you can be.
I'm looking at your face while you say it's on the refs. The refs, yeah, that's a bad call, but there's no guarantee, just like you said, because of the state of the fragility of these kickers' right. minds right now. They're so soft. Anyway, don't get me going on kickers. But Jason Garrett, I agree right now. This is, to me, in this league, the way it's set up, like, be aggressive, go for it. Mike Vrabel yesterday went for it. I'm all for that. I don't know if I agree with the play call, but go for it. Yeah. This is, especially with the guys you have on that team who you think you have, like you said, James. Come on, put it on. Put the ball on them. Put the onus on them.
I'm looking at the whole league has changed, but Jason Garrett hasn't gotten the memo. I watched virtually every game yesterday. I got three direct TV Sunday ticket packages.
Big time. I see that suit, too.
I'm looking at every coach go for it on fourth down, be super aggressive, and I'm watching this Cowboys game, and I'm like, what is Jason Garrett thinking? There's no guarantees in this field goal game. Get as close as you can. It was like he had no confidence in Dak, and then that run with Ezekiel Elliott, when they've bottled him up the entire game, it was just stupid. And so, I go back to this Amari Cooper decision, and I think it's about getting Zeke some running room, and I think it's about putting the pressure, really, on Jason Garrett. No excuses there. Jerry's been crystal clear, man. He likes Dak Prescott. I don't think his actions have kind of said he likes Jason Garrett, but he hasn't been as effusive in his praise of Jason Garrett. So I look at this Amari Cooper move, and again, I think most of the pressure's on Jason Garrett because Jerry likes Dak and Zeke.
Don't you think Jason, he doesn't trust his players?
Uh-huh. Right.
That's all that.
Jason Garrett doesn't
trust his players. I got two kids. Well, one's 10, one's 8, and this morning we're cooking breakfast, and they want to cook pancakes. And the 10-year-old can do it. And so I'm like, yeah, you can do it. You can go switch there and flip it over. But the 8-year-old, he can't do it. And I'm not going to trust him to do it. I hope that's good parody.
No, I agree with you.
But I think that's how it is with Jason Garrett and his players, with Dak and the rest of them. He just doesn't trust them. That's all that's saying.
Careful, though, Tony. Sometimes somebody knows something you don't. And the reason I don't trust him is for reasons I don't want to expose. But at the same time, he's being conservative because he's been conditioned to be conservative. Maybe he's given Dak those opportunities. And I saw a couple yesterday. Romo pointed out a couple that – Dak, it
Romo
was
nitpicking, but I hear you. Well, it was accurate.
Yeah.
It was nitpicking.
But there were moments where Dak, okay, you have the opportunity right there. Make the play. Pull the trigger. And Dak has a conservative mindset. in an NFL that is saying, go out there and go get it, and there's very few.
Dude, you got to think about it. He hasn't had to go out there and sling anything. In the first couple of years, they had a great running game. The offensive line was doing good. So his whole job was to go ahead, hand this ball off, and when the time come, play action and hit it.
Right.
And that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we had when early with Ben, you know. We ran the ball with Bussey, Willie Parker, all them, and then it came down to it. And Ben would hit a pass here and there. He'd scramble, keep the play alive, and we get big plays off of him. And right now, he doesn't have that.
A big story about Amari Cooper's old team, the Raiders. According to Marcus Thompson of the Athletic, quarterback Derek Carr has a fractured relationship with the team, which was made worse after film appeared to show Carr crying after getting sacked in Oakland's week 6 loss to the Seahawks. Carr, who had only tweeted once so far this season, pushed back in multiple tweets today, writing, quote, "On the ground, I yelled, get me up, get me. Then I got to the sideline and yelled again. Not one tear, not one time. There is the truth. People will click on it because it sounds crazy, but stop playing with me. People can try all they want to tear us apart, but it's not happening to the real ones."
Smoke from Derek Carr?
Yeah, and I...
Where they do that at?
I think Derek Carr has issues in his locker room. Mm. I don't think it's related to crying on the field. I tend to buy Derek Carr's explanation here of what he said transpired. But even if he did cry on the field after getting injured, I don't think that tears apart your relationship in the locker room. So, I believe Derek Carr has some issues in the Raiders locker room? Yes. Related to crying? No.
I think it is related to crying, but it doesn't start with crying. Let's be real. He has a balling and branding issue, and the balling has made it fractured in the locker room because you know how it goes. Most popular dudes usually are the ballers. If you're not balling, then all of a sudden those jokes not that funny, bro. Everything you do gets graded a different way, and the criticism gets greater. And then he loses the branding argument when you're not like the great quarterbacks of the Raiders lore. You think about it. If you go Jim Plunkett, if you want to go back Kent Stabler, even Rich Gannon, there was a certain balling and branding that the Raiders really buy into and the fans purchase. And then when they have a quarterback who's throwing more interceptions than touchdowns and he's crying, I said, and all of a sudden you lost 2/3 of what you need. Now all you need is the coach to bail you out. But I don't think John Gruden's the type to bail you out. He ain't throwing you a life raft. So, yeah, I think he has real issues in Oakland.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you. I don't believe it has anything to do with crying. I mean, the situation is, you know, it's they're saying it's fire. So it got to be something going on. But I don't think it's related to him crying. It didn't look like he was crying. It looked like he had that cry face. But the tears wasn't. That's that cry. But the tears not coming out. So I can buy his explanation that he was saying, but like I said, I feel like it's something else going on other than him crying. Like that's not going to be it.
I think that's funny. He hasn't tweeted all year, one tweet all year, and then he gets called for being a crybaby.
No, nobody wants.
It's like little
I'm
kid.
Not a cry. Come on,
don't call me a crybaby. I'm not crying. My little 8-year-old when he cries, I'm like, stop crying. I'm not crying. I'm not trying to cry. And you know, I do acting class. If this is happy. This is crying, right? That's crying.
But it's not a
That's
tear.
That's crying.
It's not a tear coming out.
And do you lose respect, though, because of that? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. I think so. Especially, tell me if you were playing against him and he had done that the week before, even now, as soon as you get near him, what are you guys chirping? What are you defensive players chirping up in this guy's ear?
That moment.
And if I'm on his team.
That moment.
You can't do that no more.
I'm going to go a cut deeper, though, on what's really going on here. Honestly, if you go back, Miko Grimes, the wife of the
Brett
Tampa
Grimes.
Bay.
Brett Grimes,
wife of that defensive back. She tweeted out last year that there's a rift between the offensive line and Derek Carr. And I think it's real. Derek Carr is super religious, and he's playing in the Bay, which is super secular. And he's playing for an offensive line that's, particularly last year, was super woke and super social justice warrior. There was a disconnect between this religious conservative quarterback and his offensive line. That is, and he's in the Bay, where, again, where the religious stuff doesn't play as well as it does in Middle America and other parts of America. That's the disconnect, and now people are just piling on. Guy gets hurt on the field and puts on a cry face. If you've been hurt on the field, you put on a cry face. It doesn't mean you cried, but you put on a cry face. And so they're just going at this dude.
Okay, oh, I know you wanted to go here. I got it in my notes. You want to go to that level? Damn, all right. All right, this might be our last show. Let's do that. No, I know a few of the guys on their offensive line, and the anthem issue was really a problem with those guys. And it really fractured it. And I think his base was the religion aspect, not so much a workplace issue, but certainly schism in the locker room. Let's be real about this. This happened in the Bay Area before, and with success. Mark Jackson was out there balling for the Golden State Warriors as a coach, out there putting up numbers and helping that team improve. But behind the scenes, what fractured their relationship in that organization was simple. Another guy who, as you say, is religified, and an organization that doesn't see it the same way, and that sometimes interrupts whatever you're doing on the field or on the sidelines in that example.
I'm going to go a cut further.
Oh, man, I ain't got that in my notes.
Y'all going deep. No, no, I'm out. I'm tapping out.
I'm just trying to keep what I got going.
I'm going to go a cut further.
Watch, now listen.
Again, when you talk about that national anthem deal, and this is where politics used to not be a part of the locker room. Leave that outside. Leave religion. We've now injected that into the locker room, and people are making value judgments of people based on their political positions. It's not appropriate for sports. You should leave that out of the locker room, but that's where we are in 2018, and Derek Carr is a victim of it.
I don't even know if it was out the locker room. When I played, it was in the locker room, but it stayed in the locker room, so we could beef it out, and you weren't coming in there, investigate reporting, social media, Instagram, and live in where it got out, and then emotions and ingrained the population outside the locker room, which galvanized and started to disrupt our locker room. When we had beef, the beef stayed in the ring. And then we just were able to go forward. Now, those get exposed and you got issues.
And like you said, going forward with this, as the rest of the year comes out, he responded to this. The whole locker room knows
now.
He responded. Obviously, it hit a nerve in him. Mm-hmm. He isn't playing that well this year. That's all there is to it. And this compounded with the crying and the religion and then all this other stuff, the social injustice, standing for the anthem. This isn't a good look for them. And this is why I believe Gruden is get fire selling everybody on that team.
Mm. Marshawn Lynch
telling you,
injured reserve.
Yeah, this kid, I would be shocked if he's there next year playing quarterback for the Raiders.
It's weird he has some numbers that suggest he's playing better under Gruden, under Jack Del Rio. The worst is, the most damning is the record. One win, and then the fact that he's thrown more interceptions. Everything else is actually improved.
Relocation to Jacksonville next year, and let's see what's going on with Derek Carr. And I know they spent a bunch of money on Blake Bortles, but
like
moving to the South. Time for some big stories. Tony Gonzalez is back, and we're joined now by Super Bowl champion James Harrison. Let's move to Dallas, where the Cowboys just made a major move to enhance their offense, trading a first-round pick to the Raiders for Amari Cooper. The move gives the Cowboys the number one receiver they've been lacking, but also takes away the biggest excuse for their offense's lackluster performance, which should amp up the pressure on both Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett. My contention is that more pressure to me is on Jason Garrett than Dak Prescott. Jason Garrett, I think this is his eighth or ninth year. He's had his shot. He's a 500 football coach. He's supposed to add some kind of offensive advantage to the Cowboys that I just haven't seen, particularly since Tony Romo disappeared. I believe this is a move to, as I said yesterday, to help Ezekiel Elliott, to help Dak Prescott. But to me, the primary pressure is on Jason Garrett. I think Jerry Jones likes Dak Prescott.
I think it's on Dak Prescott, just like you said. It's to help Dak Prescott. Or it can expose Dak Prescott, because now there's no excuses. If you want to be the future franchise quarterback, we gave you a number one wide receiver.
Let's go.
Yeah, I hear you, but let's go to the schoolyard and play. We got toys now. Let's go out there and see it. And if you look at Scott Linehan, you look at Jason Garrett, they've called plays where receivers have been open. They've called plays where they moved the ball down the field. Dak Prescott had a good game, certainly by his standards, last week. They've looked at the film, the all 22, and said, Dak, you missed that one. Tony Romo kept pointing it out. respectfully, he tried his best.
Why do we act like quarterbacks never miss?
I get it. I get it. But then if you're going to miss, make a lot. You know what I mean? Like, don't just keep missing and then make a few, because then that's when the seesaw is out of balance. All this is going to expose or ensure that Dak Prescott is the franchise quarterback. But we're going to see this year, because now he has what he needs.
I mean, that's some of the things that he had, even when he had, you know, Dez. He had opportunities where he could get the ball downfield, and he just didn't make those throws. And I'm with you guys. I think it puts a lot of pressure on Dak. You're going to get to see and show that you're that franchise quarterback that Jerry Jones says that you are. And if you aren't, then it's going to expose that you're not that guy.
You don't think he's a franchise quarterback?
I don't think he's that guy that's going to be able to sit in there and give you, you know, a consistent 273-plus 100 yards a game and go out there and win you a game. I think he's a guy that's going to keep you in a game. He can have the abilities to go out there and give you something if the run game is going, because the play action will help. But I don't think he's a guy that's going to sit out there and just come in and win you a game.
Like I said yesterday, I am excited about this trade, because it's going to answer all the questions that we've been talking about all year about Dak Prescott. The pressure is definitely on Dak Prescott. Jason Garrett, I don't think he's going anywhere. First of all, who wants that job to come work for Jerry Jones? Nothing against Jerry Jones, but Jerry Jones
pays $3 to $5 million.
Yeah. If you're in the cash, if you're just in the cash, but if you're into actually being able to have
America,
but if you want to control the team and do it your way, you can't go there and be Frank Sinatra. You're not gonna be able to do it your way. You got Mr. Jones up there.
Who gets to do that?
A lot of guys. Jay Gruden. I mean, Tom Cruise is doing it right now. There's a lot of players.
Sean McVay.
They get to come
on, man. You know they got freedom out there. It's a freedom out there.
I agree.
It's a freedom out there.
But he had to earn it, and he had to follow in behind.
He was 30 years old. He didn't earn anything. They were just like, dang. You get into a room with Sean McVay, you're like, okay, whatever you said, let's do this.
What you want? I want everything. You got it. Come on in.
So going back to it, Dak Prescott clearly has more, and he should. I think this is a great opportunity for Dak to actually get out there, and let's see what you can do now. You got the running back. Now you can put Cole Beasley back in the slot, which is where he's very, very good at. You got that number one receiver, legitimate. I don't know if he's an upper end number one receiver, but he's a number one receiver. All that pressure is on you. Let's go see what you got. And I hope he comes. I'll tell you, I don't know if you guys had a chance to actually hang out with this kid. He's a really good kid. I hope it works out for him. But let's see it. And the Cowboys now can say, just like you said, James, I'm like, if you're a franchise quarterback, prove it now. Because if I'm going to give you $30 million or more, it was what these quarterbacks are getting now, you better go out there and put some numbers up the rest of the season.
If the Cowboys don't make the playoffs, I'll take any bet any of y'all want to offer. Jason Garrett gets fired, and Dak comes back as the quarterback.
Well, he might come back as the quarterback, and he might get the contract at the hometown discount that he doesn't desire. I'm not saying that.
So how is there not more pressure on Garrett?
Because the pressure is not necessarily tied to the results. Like, you could get rid of Jason Garrett just because say, hey, I'm going to get this hometown cheaper prospect, and then I'm going to draft at that position and try and go really big going forward. The Dallas Cowboys may look to do that, but what they have right now is what's dynastic in the NFL, tripods. You played with one when you got Big Ben when he's rolling, right? Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, that's a tripod. Go back to the Cowboys, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman. Once you get quarterback, receiver, running back, everyone on defense is there and says, no excuses. That offense has to roll. Denver Broncos, you want to go back to those days. Like, every team that I've seen that's been dynastic has had those positions covered. If Dak is the answer, he's going to be dynastic in his offense.
What does dynastic mean? I never heard that word.
That's a Colombian word. You rolling.
Russell Westbrook made his season debut last night, dropping 32-12-8. But even that wasn't enough to stop the Thunder from losing to the Kings by 11 points. After all the fanfare this summer about Paul George's decision to stay in Oklahoma City, the Thunder are now off to an 0-3 start, the worst in franchise history. I think this is a big deal. And I say that just because, and I know Russ set out the first two games, but to have Sacramento handed to you like that and to get off to an 0-3 start after Paul George makes this huge decision to stay in OKC, I'm a little bit concerned if I'm an OKC fan.
Well, I'm going to get through this quick because I'm flanked by too much basketball over here. But I would say that He's the center of their universe. It's designed for Russell Westbrook, and his absence in the preseason, his absence around these guys while he's dealing with the knee injury, it's a devastating blow to this team, because as much as you want to say they still have talent, they didn't have a Roberson as well. You can see a Paul George-led team should be able to win some games, but it's too early in the season where they're still trying to figure out themselves without their main guy. I think that was too difficult for them.
You're still in week one. And you're trying to figure out what you just touched on, Marcellus, where you're trying to figure out how you're going to play with your guy. Missed the preseason, had a couple practices, probably wasn't too intense, because you're trying to rehab his situation and get him back on the platform to be the better version of himself. So it takes time.
It's the first week of the season.
Now it's the second week. Now you got action.
Sacramento.
My thing was he looked like himself. That was my main concern. Was he going to be explosive? Was he going to get to his spots? Was he going to do all these things, keep up the pace? He did. He passed the test. Now let's see what happened in the next 10 games.
In basketball, you do not overreact week one and week two. The tone is not set in those 2 weeks. Teams are still trying to figure what their identity is, how they're going to play, how they're going to play off each other. Russ not being there is a big minus for the home opener when they played great against Golden State. That was a great game. Mm. And the Sacramento loss is just one loss in itself. It's a bad representation of what they want to do for their season. I still have high expectations for that team. I think they could be the second or third best team in the West because the way they're constructed, but not having Russ there and not having Russ in a groove and ready to play and not practicing, as he shot the ball not great from three. So that's a part of his game that that's been evolving and it is a big part of his game now. So him not being prepared is a part of that loss, but I don't think it will linger into the regular season.
Yeah, I totally agree, because you look at Portland last season, they was able to get as high as a 3 seed. And then you look at the personnel going down, you know, in vertical order. Russell Westbrook is probably top two guys in the association. He's going to bring it night in and night out. Arguably, triple-double, back-to-back.
He's a problem.
Most athletic guard at that position. All these things. Right, he's going to bring it.
But is this team going to bring it with him? This is a team discussion, not about Russell Westbrook. When I look around the West, the Denver Nuggets aren't to be trifled with.
They are Houston, a problem.
New Orleans.
Health is a big part of the representation you put out in week one and week two. And the excitement of the season lets teams that are not going to be playoff teams still have great games. It's that, can they bring that for 82 games? Do I think the Sacramento Kings will be bringing that for 82 games? I don't think so, because they're young. But they're a team to look out for and on the watch.
4-7, OKC is going to beat it. 4-7, somewhere in there.
4-7. He said top three. I'm 6.
They're going to be in the playoffs.
6-7.
They're going to be in the playoffs. Yeah.
They're going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah. Their teams, like the Clippers, off to a faster start. That consistent excellence. Will they be able to keep that up?
So when you see them win two games,
right?
Y'all got to win the championship.
You say championship,
right? Exactly.
Or bust, right?
Yeah.
Now.
You see what I'm saying? I'm prefacing.
Bet you there haven't been a lot of 0-3, top one or two seeds, but we'll see. All right. Welcome back with Lock and Wiley. We're joined once again by Yahoo Sports NBA insider Chris Haynes. Let's move to the NBA, where yesterday Rajon Rondo spoke for the first time since his brawl with Chris Paul, denying he spit at CP3 and adding, quote, "Everyone wants to believe Chris Paul is a good guy. They don't know he's a horrible teammate. They don't know how he treats people." One of Paul's old teammates, Clipper teammates, Big Baby Davis, agreed with Rondo on Instagram, writing, quote, "I played with both of them. CP3 is a very bad teammate." But Rockets general manager Daryl Morey responded, tweeting a picture implying Rondo's comments were the pot calling the kettle black. I'm a little bit confused here, because all these guys chirping can't be wrong.
Right.
I think Chris Paul is different, and I think, but some of it could just be he's about business, and not everybody in the NBA is about business. And so that may cause him to clash with guys who don't take the game as seriously and the business of basketball as seriously as he does. I'm reluctant to pick a side.
You reluctant? Get off the fence and earn your money. Earn your money.
Because
what?
I'm someone that people are like, oh, man, he's a jerk, he's a jerk, he's a jerk. And I'm just a teddy bear, man. And so I'm, Chris Paul might be a teddy bear, man, and these guys just too soft.
Well, let's learn something from the great philosopher Snoop Dogg. So much drama in the LBC. It's kind of hard being a homie CP3, but here's the thing about Chris Paul, and he's not the only one guilty of this. I will defend him even better than Daryl Morey will. He's a barker. Now, he's not the only barker in the NBA. Kobe Bryant was a barker. And no one liked playing with Kobe Bryant, but Kobe Bryant was a five-time champion that made you swallow your pride and take that barking and the bite that came with it. Here's Chris Paul. Chris Paul's a barker. But on that same team, when you say it's time to swallow my pride and just deal with this, oh, wait a minute, you ain't won jack. So you over here barking, and I don't see the bite. And that's where it comes from. I've been on teams before when we're all, like you said, it's about business, professionalism. You're saying all the right things. You sound like the Mamba mentality, except you ain't got the Mamba hardware. So that's when everybody, when they get to their safe distances, and everyone who said that he's not a good teammate, I like him. They're cool cats, but they also are safely away from Chris Paul when he was barking at them on the baseline. And now everybody wants to come back at him, and no one could come back at Kobe and others who bark but have the championships to go with it.
Well, I'm going to have to quote the great Snoop philosopher myself.
Oh, well, let's do this.
And say that Marcellus, you're jocking my style. Because you took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, nice.
But that's the difference. Nice. Chris Paul is in the Kobe Bryant category as far as leadership qualities, and you can throw in Jimmy Butler for that matter.
Mm.
The only difference is the hardware.
Yeah. That's a major difference.
That is a major difference. And plus, then you add in the simple fact that Chris Paul has that leadership style, but he's also a ball-dominant point guard. And I remember I said this about this a couple of days ago. He's a guy who controls the rock about 18, 19 seconds of the whole 24. Players get tired of that. You know, that was one of the main reasons DeAndre Jordan wanted to leave and go to Dallas a couple of years back in that free agent fiasco. So that's the only difference. Look, and Rondo, he has leadership style tendencies like Chris Paul, but a difference that I heard when I talked to multiple players about him is that he'll come on after practice, pat you on the back, tell you everything is good. We'll get it the next day. While Chris Paul may just tell you what you don't want to hear and leave it at that and expect you to come back next day.
Yeah, look, I played for a coach, Bill Parcells, a barker, and every single time when he was barking, you had to go, oh, yeah. That's Bill Parcells, the champion. So you just got to take those things. And it's a major difference maker when you have hardware. If I were drafted to New England Patriots, I would be sitting up here right now, even before I was a free agent. I could have been on the bench. Two-time NFL Super Bowl champion, Marcellus Wiley. All of a sudden, everything I say, a little more punch to it, man. So that's the game.
I'm going to analogize Chris to a guy that I got a lot of respect for, close to, Isaiah Thomas. Mm-hmm. And Isaiah came to the NBA with an NCAA title ring at Indiana. And Isaiah Thomas, if you really, ultimate leader, ultimate hold you accountable guy. And I know Chris, I believe, has tried to model himself after Isaiah Thomas. But again, Isaiah went out and got those two rings.
Got those.
He took on Michael Jordan. He took on Larry Bird. He took on Magic Johnson. And so when he's out there barking and doing his thing, he's the little man that did it all. And maybe Chris needs to adjust his approach a little bit now, because, I mean, he's deep off into his career. No titles to show for it. But I think his intentions are good.
Yes.
And again, until I hear an NBA champion call him out, that's when I'll take it most seriously. Mm-hmm. All right, stick around later in the show. We'll give you our approval ratings for Chris Paul and see how these latest comments affect the All-Star point guard. But first, let's move to another of his old teammates, Blake Griffin, who has been a bit of a punching bag the last couple of seasons, but is actually off to a hot start this year in Detroit, scoring a career-high 50 points last night in a win over the Sixers. He even hit the game-winning and one free throw in overtime as the Pistons moved to 3-0 on the season. As impressed as I am, and this Uh-oh. It was impressive, uh-huh. as impressed as I am, but this is the new NBA, and I want to see, again, everybody scoring over 120 points, man. You go look at the scores last night. Everybody's putting up numbers. I think we're going to have to get to the end of this season before we can evaluate what, because I think some guys may score 80 this year. I think with the extra possessions and the place of play, and you only got 14 seconds after an offensive rebound, I think we're going to see guys put up huge numbers. And so I want some more perspective before I'm willing to beat on the desk and say, man, Blake, the poster child is back.
So you want perspective, huh?
Yeah.
You ready to beat on the desk then right now? Because I got some perspective for you. You're talking about a five-time All-Star Blake Griffin. You're talking about a four-time second-team All-NBA player Blake Griffin. Now let's carve up his career because it's two Blake Griffins. It's the one that's on the sideline because he's injured, missed 29% of his regular season games because of injury, or it's the guy who was top five in the NBA before these same injuries. So this is nothing new for Blake Griffin when he starts to get that momentum. And even Stan Van Gundy said this last week, what is stopping Blake Griffin from being a superstar? He said injuries, nothing else. Blake Griffin, look at these numbers, this is insane. Since he came into the league, fourth in rebounding, second in scoring, first in assists for power forwards, 12th of all positions in scoring. Blake, when he can keep a healthy Bill out there and play with this intensity, play with the 82-game schedule, and be on the court, not on the sidelines, is going to be a top player in this league always.
Marcellus, he doesn't play for the Clippers anymore. You ain't got to keep talking up like that.
Let it go.
let it go, Marcel. Man. But I'll tell you this. This is what Blake has going for himself. Obviously, it's a short track record right now. But LeBron is out of the East. He has an offense that's built and centered around him for the first time. Then you have to look at it. His game has evolved to the point where he's not just relying on his athleticism. I was in the car with my brother yesterday, and he showed me a clip of Blake Griffin sneaking a dunk on Joel Embiid in transition. Sneaking a dunk. When he last heard Blake Griffin sneaking a dunk in? But, you know, that's what he's evolved to. But look, it's only a 3-4 games.
Oh, here you go. It's like dude been putting up numbers for years.
Oh, he has.
Three games.
He has. But I want to see not only him elevate his own game, but elevate the team's game on his
3-0.
Yeah.
Beat a decent Philly team.
Get him.
But my
78 more games.
He 5 3-pointers last night, I believe, as well. And again, he's always been able to shoot, but wow, 5 3-pointers. I just think all these extra possessions. I think we're gonna look back at Russell Westbrook's triple-double season.
Mm.
And that's going to have a little new perspective given this new NBA. As it relates to Blake Griffin, I expect Kevin Durant this year to drop 80 on somebody. Mm. I expect him to go full Kobe and drop 80 the way the NBA. I expect Steph Curry perhaps to have a 70-point game. We're going to see that as we adjust to this new NBA where they basically illegalized defense.
Draymond Green said
illegalized. They've illegalized.
It's bigger
getting
than
arrested. Getting arrested.
It's bigger than Nino Brown, man. Everybody going down.
5 to 10.
I would say this. It's a new NBA, but Blake Griffin is the same OG, and he's the same dude that could score in that era and in this era. More possessions, I get it, but guys are shooting the three ball. Blake Griffin doesn't listen to challenges without responding to them and making you eat your words. Think about it. Blake came in just dunking, just athletic. Yeah. Okay, guess what? Now I'm going to hit the elbow on you. Oh, okay, that's all you can do. You can't shoot outside the elbow in the painted area. Then he went to the 18-footer because President Obama told him he couldn't hit an 18-footer. Then he went to the free throw line. People said, Blake Griffin, if you're so great, why you can't hit the free throw? Start hitting the free throws. Now you said he couldn't shoot the three ball. Uh-huh. Blake Griffin out there, 5 3-pointers made. Y'all better respect greatness when y'all see it because it's happening right in front of your face.
You know what? I like your argument because Blake Griffin's kind of been disrespected as kind of a studio gangster.
Yes,
and
thank you.
He actually perhaps has more heart than we're giving him credit for.
Now we're cooking.
Get the criticism, the adjustment. Woke athletes across America, gather around. I've got a story to tell you that your social justice warrior handlers won't. In broad daylight yesterday, a U.S. attorney misused the criminal justice system and convicted 3 men of bogus felony crimes for allegedly defrauding the NCAA system of exploitation called amateurism. James Gatto, Merle Code, Christian Dawkins are facing federal prison time for the heinous crime of giving black kids and their families money for participating in a system that modern NCAA architect Walter Byers analogized to slavery. Don't get mad at me. Walter Byers, a white conservative man from Kansas, called the system he helped build in the 1950s a form of slavery in his 1995 memoir. NCAA amateurism is a sham. Everybody knows it. But Gatto, Code, and Dawkins are headed to jail in the aftermath of the so-called Adidas trial. And here's who's next. Chuck Person, Lamont Evans, Emmanuel Richardson, and Tony Bland. Those are the next victims of U.S. Attorney Robert Kuzami's mission to protect the NCAA's corrupt system of amateurism. Here's what Kuzami had the audacity to say following yesterday's morally bankrupt convictions. Quote, today's convictions expose an underground culture of illicit payments, deception, and corruption in the world of college basketball. These defendants now stand convicted of not simply flouting the rules, but breaking the law for their own personal gain. As a jury has now found the defendants not only deceive universities into issuing scholarships under false pretenses, they deprive the universities of their economic rights and tarnished an ideal which makes college sports a beloved tradition by so many fans all over the world. Are you kidding me? This man had the gall to unload this pile of manure in 2018. Deprive the universities of their economic rights? These kids and their families were paid at the behest of the people running the basketball programs at these schools because everyone working within the fraudulent NCAA system knows the system is fraudulent. These universities aren't victims. They're making billions of dollars off the backs of football and basketball players. And here are the guys going to jail to protect this outdated system. James Gatto, Merle Cole, Christian Dawkins, Lamont Evans, Chuck Person, Tony Bland, and Emmanuel Richardson. And here are the woke loudmouths who are definitely silent on the matter. Colin Kaepernick, Malcolm Jenkins, LeBron James, Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Eric Reed. What? Nike got their tongues tied? Their little fake Twitter leader hasn't told them to be emotional and upset about this abuse of criminal justice power? It's much easier to throw on an equality t-shirt and take a knee on issues outside your area of expertise than it is to clean up your own house. I'm embarrassed that the very athletes exploited by amateurism have nothing to say when the Harriet Tubmans of NCAA amateurism are going to jail. All right, joining the desk now are former Bengals wide receiver T.J. Houshmandzadeh, Yahoo Sports writer Chris Haynes. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Why are we not in outrage and going off about this? Why are the athletes so silent as men go to jail over something this bogus?
You brought it today, brother. agree or disagree, you brought it. Woosah is the first thing I want to do just to break the tension. But I think that they are. I think these athletes, the ones that are outspoken in different causes, social injustice, criminal reform, whatever you want to call the woke athlete, I think they are speaking out about this as well. I'll give you two examples. One, the LeBron James produced documentary Student Athlete spoke about it. Did it land exactly where we desired? Did they come up with an economic plan that suffices? No, but they certainly are speaking about this. Two, just yesterday, which is not getting enough conversation and national attention, Rich Paul actually talked about an internship for a student athlete who was supposed to go and play basketball at Syracuse, who's now going to be a New Balance intern to the tune of $1 million for 3 months. So what's happening right now, Whitlock? As you know from the debate team 101, the first thing they tell you is the best way to win an argument is to use their words against them. Now, Rich Paul, LeBron James are using the term student athlete against the NCAA. Hey, students get internships, don't they? Oh, you didn't know they get $1 million ones from New Balance? You're bad. So I think they are actually approaching this.
Some of them are. Okay. LeBron James.
Nibbling at the edges. This man going to jail.
Nibbling.
Yeah.
Jail.
Yeah.
And ain't nobody saying nothing.
Well, that's where the hypocrisy lies in this whole situation, is the fact that these head coaches, high-profile head coaches, they know the system. They know how everything works. And they've been getting away for a while.
Chris, let me go one step higher. The school presidents who run the NCAA, this is their system. The school presidents, they know what's going on. Continue.
But who's being indicted? The assistant coaches, the player development coaches. Mm. The little working underlings of these sneaker
the hoppers on the street.
Exactly. Those individuals. Fire, huh? And so I will say this. I think for the most part, I think LeBron James, you mentioned the documentary, and Darius Bazley, the New Balance $1 million shoe deal he has going on as an internship skipping college for going that right. But I think one part that I think we don't think about enough is that for most players, they're so removed, talking professional players, and even these coaches, you mentioned Steve Kerr, they're so removed from college. It's so far. It's like most of the time, it's the ones that's really talking about it are the ones who still are associated with these institutions or still are not too far removed from these colleges. I think they're just fighting battles that are within their rights and that's affecting them and their peers right now.
I think they're talking about a lot of issues they're far removed from. They're involved in the basketball world. They're involved in the athletic world. They have a lot of opinions about things outside their area of expertise. To me, this is the shoe companies pulling their little puppet strings. Don't touch this. Don't touch this because, again, the same way Adidas just got in trouble, it could happen to Under Armour, Nike, or any of these other shoe companies.
The problem I have is life isn't fair. And my mother had four kids. Only one of them graduated. Is that fair? No. We grew up on government cheese in the projects. Is that fair? No. If a kid is good enough to benefit because he has athletic talent, it shouldn't be a problem. It's a complete crime that the we call them runners.
Yeah.
If they don't get these kids to commit, they're going to lose their job. So by any means necessary, oh, you got $100,000? Oh, if we can get this, they're going to do that. And it's not for them to waste taxpayer money and even go to trial with this.
Thank you.
It's a waste of taxpayer money. The people that on the jury that convicted these men, what are they doing? Like, what are you doing?
And they're convicting the wrong man.
LeBron James didn't even go to college. For him to even say something about this is great.
Yeah.
Something needs to change about this because you got coaches that are making millions. Tell Nick Saban to go to Ball State and win a national championship. He won't do it. If you don't have the players, you're not getting it done.
I don't want to demonize the coach.
Didn't mean to talk about your school, I'm sorry.
No. I don't want to demonize the coaches, though, because, and again, I put some blame on the coaches. But these universities and the people running the universities, the school presidents, they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly how much money is being generated by football and basketball, and they take that money. And, yeah, they paid Nick Saban well, but they spread that all around campus.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody eats off the backs of the football and basketball players. And we're sitting here in 2018 when everybody, Walter Byers invented this system. He perfected it. He said what it is. And we're sitting here and there's a U.S. attorney somewhere putting people in jail over a system everybody knows is corrupt and unfair. And people are going to jail for this. And no one is upset.
Okay, but let's get this corrected and let's get this clear. The people who are going to jail weren't pure in intention.
It doesn't
they
matter.
They just were less corrupt.
It doesn't
oh,
matter.
Oh, hold on. That does matter.
No.
It's
no.
Lost. They were less corrupt than the institutions, and you could say NCAA as a whole. But trust me, when you walk into a living room of someone who's been through poverty, as you and I have, welfare, food stamps, government cheese, and you walk up to me and you know I'm one of those talents that is a one and done. Been broke 18 years, I will be rich in my 19th. But I got 1 year of a bridge, and you offer me $40,000, $80,000, $100,000. When that's not fixing my issues, that's a temporary fix that could be a lifelong of problems for me and now for you. Do not come up to me acting like you're trying to save me
but
when really you're trying
is,
to save yourself.
But the point is, it shouldn't be a lifelong problem.
I agree
it
with that.
It should not be a lifelong. Anybody, any kid that grows up with nothing, 40 grand is like $1 million.
And that's 40, the shortcut.
You're like,
hey, but,
what?
But it does fix some things in that short term.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
What are you talking about?
Hold on. What's your goal, first of all? Is your goal to make 40,000?
No.
You're going to sign a...
We're talking about his family.
You're thinking about right now.
Bro, I was there.
That fridge would be full.
Hold on. Y'all acting like...
Some bills would be paid.
I'm sorry. I wasn't an athlete that could have gotten a little extra dough, but decided, you know what? I don't need that on my resume. I don't need that for
I'm going to give you a cookie for that.
I don't want a cookie.
I don't want a cookie.
It's probably government issue. Shoot if it was when I was growing up, but I'll tell you what, hold on. I was a kid, you were the kid too.
Right.
I'm on the field, we saw shortcuts left and right. The homies hitting us up. Hey man, I got a way to you make money. NCAA, institutions, boosters.
But you got,
come on, man.
We're talking.
You've been broke 18 years, you can't
talking,
wait one more?
I'll be, huh? I was a zero star recruit out of high school, so.
TJ,
let
me handle
this. We're talking the best of the best.
Let me handle this.
Get on, J-Dub. Let's go. Get on, J-Dub.
Okay, you want the kids to wait 1 year. We've known for at least since 1995 when this man wrote this book that this system is corrupt, and he analogized it to slavery. A white conservative man from Kansas analogizes to slavery. How many years we gotta wait for this system to change?
Whitlock, let me tell you
this. How many years we gotta wait?
I agree with you, the system's a scam, it's a sham, but guess what? Now what it has is created is now the runners are saying, let's be a little less corrupt than the system and take advantage of these same athletes.
You're saying these rules are in place, follow the rules if these are the rules. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying that, one, but I'm saying two, do not act like these guys were sitting there with the purest intention coming into the room.
And that's fine.
And that's why
Whitlock doesn't want to come down hard on the coaches. I am.
Go.
Because they know what's going on.
Of course.
And now when the Chuck Persons, these guys that they've counted on to implement this system.
Be the fall guy.
I didn't know anything about that. This is not what our program is made of. I have a problem with that. Don't act dumb now. Yeah. Let's go after
Marcellus,
them.
Marcellus, here's what I'm going to do. I'm holding the government, and that's what this is. This is a governmental abuse of power. I'm holding them to a higher standard than this little collection of individuals.
Right.
The government is now reinforcing a system that the architect said is akin to slavery. Everybody's out on amateurism. Yes. There is no special value. Everybody knows it. And so the government, what the government is doing at the behest of these universities and presidents is reinforcing a system that everybody in America has agreed is corrupt and unfair, and the government is now putting a fresh paint job on it and trying to rehabilitate something. The government, again, everybody wants to fight the power. Everybody wants to be soul brother number one, and I'm standing up against authority. The government here is out of control, putting these men in jail for giving some poor people some money, and we're all sitting around saying, I can't defend this system.
Preach, Whitlock, preach.
I cannot defend it.
I agree with you.
You say amen.
But
it ain't coming out like I wanted. Because I've also seen the coach, the runner, and all those who are benefiting off the corruption, and those people also need to be addressed. Whitlock, I hope you understand.
But they should be the face.
Change the system. Marcellus and Whitlock agree. However, since it's not changed, do not go out there and have Wild Wild West because you know it's corrupt.
Well, but if they're not having Wild Wild West, how are you going to enact or try to implement change? These conversations, these things are going on, will force them to go to the table and try to implement some change.
Oh, no. I think that what we're seeing is more so what Rich Paul talked about. He's working with the shoe companies. Who's giving $1 million for the internship?
Okay, but...
Uh-huh. You know what's happening? He's using the puppets against
themselves. These dudes are possibly going to go to prison for nothing.
That's true.
For nothing. That's the biggest thing. For nothing.
The rifleman deserves better. The rifleman deserves better.
All of them deserve better. This is a sham. And it's an outrage, and I wish more athletes would lend their voice to it. All right, thanks, Chris. Thanks, TJ. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley here, and we're joined now by NFL insider, Fox NFL insider, Jay Glazer.
Hey,
let's talk some NFL.
Before we talk NFL, I just want America to really understand what I'm dealing with here with these two, okay? So I go on the show before Colin Cowherd, and I wear my MVP T-shirt and this. And then the producers here tell me, no, you got to dress up for these show. Producers, yeah. Do you have any idea how filthy these two individuals are? Are you kidding me? Who are we dealing with here?
We're trying to get you right. You got a suited and booted.
Oh,
up
my
here,
God. Man. I've known these cats for a long time.
Yeah, don't.
They are
fool
of the world.
Don't live up to the insider label right now on that. You know too much.
Aaron, you're thinking of Vegas Whitlock. This is Los Angeles.
Oh, Whitlock, is that Jay. What that is?
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I said, Aaron Jay. We're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers here. Aaron Rodgers takes on the undefeated Los Angeles Rams, the best team in football. Mm-hmm. Any chance Rodgers and the Packers can hobble his way through some sort of upset?
First of all, he should not have been playing the first 6 weeks of this year. I mean, the injury that he had, and we talked about this on Fox NFL Sunday, would have kept most people out 6 to 8 weeks. He had a really deep bone bruise. He got some bleeding going on in there. And an MCL injury. So the two of them, it's so painful. That's the type of injury that would keep most guys out a good 2 months or so. And guy missed, he didn't miss a full half, right? I mean, it's unreal. He's not from this planet. He's different. Uh-huh. So can he beat the Rams? Guy can do anything he wants. He's just, he's different. We've seen it.
Yeah. He'll need some help on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, he certainly does. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know,
a lot of help on the other side of the ball, yeah.
We're able to self-correct all the time, and he's found ways to go out there and still be Aaron Rodgers-like despite this injury. Remember that first down he ran for in the last game?
And you're looking going,
how's he
how
doing?
How can you do that? Yeah. And then, you know, the thing also about Aaron and the way the Packers are is that they, you know, he improvises so much. It's almost like him and Roethlisberger have this thing where you go in there, once you kind of get the pocket to collapse and once you hit him, then a whole nother play starts. Yeah. So I think that as the season goes on, after week eight, that's when you really, okay, him and his receivers will start to get a little bit more on the same page. They'll start to understand, all right, when he goes this way and the pocket collapses and the play, you know, collapses, we need to go over here. And that's when I think you see them getting hotter down the stretch.
Let's go to a young quarterback in the league, a tale of two seasons for Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. Losers of their first three games, but now winners of their last four games and in first place. Can Deshaun Watson sustain his level of play?
Yeah, I mean, Deshaun Watson, what is your, first of all, this is a league of tough guys. I don't care what they say, right? It is a league of tough guys. He is about as tough as you can. Because we first had we first broke this story 2 weeks ago on Fox NFL Sunday, and I'd say he's playing with a crack rib, bruised lung, and a partially collapsed lung. And Strahan was going, I couldn't even do the show like that. I mean, this guy's playing like this. And then last week we report that they actually had to bus him to Jacksonville because of air pressure. They didn't want to put him on a plane. This is the type of cat you want leading your team. Absolutely. You want a guy like this going, oh, my God, talking about going above and beyond for us. He's doing that for us. Well, we got to lay it down for him.
I think he's playing so well with these injuries. People need to keep that into account when they look at his statistics and compare them to what he did last year and kind of electrify the league. This may be even more impressive what he's doing this year.
It's not just, again, it's not just a crack rib. It's a bruised lung, a partially collapsed lung. It's, no. I mean, it's how it hurts when you yell your cadence out. It hurts when you breathe. Yeah. Hurts when you laugh. Hurts when you do anything. And he's just out there and he's telling people, I don't even notice the pain. He notices the pain. There's no way you can't. But yet he's doing what he has to for the team. He's impressive, man. He is the epitome, really, I think, of where this league is going. You have guys like him and Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield. Like, the league has a bright future with these guys.
All right, we've had James Harrison on the previous 2 days, ask him a bunch of Le'Veon Bell questions. Everybody thought Le'Veon Bell was going to be back by now. Any chance this dude just sits out the entire season?
You know when Le'Veon Bell's coming?
When?
No, I'm asking you. Do you know when he's coming?
I don't know. I'm about to say no. No. Please tell me.
So, and that's, I think, part of what has gotten the players so upset is that they were just like, you know, they keep getting told that he's going to show up at one point, and then he doesn't. And I did, though, report this week that they finally had talks last week. And what the talks were is that once he comes back, the Steelers want to put him on a 2-week roster exemption list, which you normally do. You want to see what the player's health is. You want to see if he's okay. You want to see what the conditioning is. In camp, if a guy's not in shape, you can put him on PUP list for a little while.
Right.
It's okay. You can't do that with him. So, but during that 2-week period, they don't want to pay him. It's their right not to pay him. He has to agree to those terms before he then agrees to sign his tender. Once he signs the tender, then he can come back and play. Now, just because they have him on that 2-week roster exemption doesn't mean they can use all 2 weeks, but they can. So it's a whole different part here where they're both going to dig their heels in.
Man, all that said, is he coming back this year?
I can't answer the question. I think we all know, because even when he says, I'm coming back, like, teammates were convinced, and they're talking to him. They thought he was showing up week one. It didn't happen. Then there was reports he was showing up in the bye week. Didn't happen. And then even if he wanted to come back at the end of the bye week last week, they closed the offices for the weekend, so he couldn't have done that. And then they were convinced he's showing up Monday. Didn't happen. So I'm a reporter who likes to deal in fact.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you when he's coming because I don't want to be wrong.
Well, I'm an analyst that likes to deal in an opinion.
Okay.
So guess what? Please tell me.
What's your opinion?
What's your opinion?
No. I just said fact. I don't know.
Let me ask both of y'all this question. Because as I'm sitting, if he sits out the whole year, the history on guys that have sat out an entire season, I'm thinking of Sean Gilbert.
That's what I'm thinking of.
I'm thinking Dan Williams, I think, did it. He was a defensive lineman.
Joey Galloway, did he sit out the whole year with his franchise tenders and eventually got traded?
I know that Gilbert got paid.
I think.
Like, it didn't hurt him.
But I'm saying, it didn't help him on the field, though, is what I'm saying.
True.
If he sits out a whole year, could he be the same player coming back?
Well, you know, you have to look at it. It's like a guy tearing his ACL in camp. sits out a whole year? Can they be the same player?
Yeah, they can.
They can, and, yeah. and he's not coming back from an injury. The thing more so is, are you ever going to make up that $15 million? Sick. Even in whatever contract you have, you have to put an extra $15 million in for you to make that up. And at that running back position, that's hard. Defensive end, not so hard. Mm-hmm. Quarterback, not so hard. Running back, very hard.
Let's go to Giants and all their issues and recent trades. A lot of conversation is this team has given up on this season. So are the Giants tanking?
No. I don't think they're tanking. I think the Giants have a lot of problems. And they had the second pick of the draft last year for a reason. They got issues in there. Okay, there's culture issues in there. And everybody thought, well, we got a new coach. We got a great running back here. We've got a left tackle. All our problems will be solved. No. The problems that were happening in the last couple of years aren't suddenly going to disappear from that. And I think you see a lot of the antics that have gone on the last couple of years. They're not suddenly going away here with Pat Shurmur. I think Pat's the right guy in there. He's a grown-up, okay? When there's been a lot of stuff in past teams, he's always been above the fray. That's what you want. But guys are so used to the culture in their last couple of years of carrying on the sideline. It seems like every time now, receiver and Eli don't hit each other correctly. It's like a pity party out there. Everybody's doing this. They're throwing their hands. It's a pity party. They're all feeling so sorry for themselves, or they're so frustrated. It's like, just play the damn game.
So you're playing the culture card, not the quarterback change card, and some people saying even the coaching.
No, because I think even if you had that, you still have other issues of when things aren't going well, there's going to be people hitting the nets and the bench and the fan and the walking in.
The bad culture.
Hey, on the other side of the ball also. I mean, it's just the way, you know, the way they've all handled their business. There's been a lot of guys there in the last couple of years. Look at all the stuff that's happened. I think Eli's just shell-shocked from what happened last year. I don't think he ever recovered from what happened last year.
Mentally.
Yeah, I don't think he ever did. I think he's just kind of shell-shocked from all of it.
I think he's being unfairly criticized, Jay. I think the criticism of Eli is too much. No one's talking about the other broader issues.
Well, they are. The O-line?
Yes.
No, they're definitely talking about that. They're talking about that also. There's a lot of issues. But my point is, everybody just assume we make three personnel moves and the entire culture in this place has changed. The energy in here has changed. It's not going to happen. You know, there's guys in the past here last year, the last 2 years, cornerbacks walking out, right, and getting suspended and leaving, and guys saying, well, we're just leaving practice, leaving meetings. I mean, you know, Odell's quotes earlier, like the quotes that happened earlier this season, if that was the Strahan, Jumbo Elliott, Jesse Armstead, William Roberts teams, right,
yeah,
there'd be about six guys waiting in your locker for you. Mm. You just didn't do it. You didn't break that code. Today's cat's a little bit different in certain ways. And I think they see Odell do it, so they're like, okay, we could all do it also. It's gotta be about those 53 guys in there, man. It cannot be about one of them. Doesn't matter.
Very quickly, Jay, we gotta go. Does Patrick Peterson get traded?
Nope. I don't think he does.
Whoa.
I think they've really and that's the thing. Raiders, here's the difference. Raiders, Khalil Mack, like, I'm not going there and I'm not playing there. And Gruden's like, okay, and he said he's not gonna play here, so I might as well trade him. Patrick Peterson says I want out. Steve Kime's like, you guys crazy? I'm not trading this guy. And now look, if somebody sends the most ridiculous offer, but he's like, I'm not trading this guy. And he's like, no, I'm not doing it. And just because your kid throws a tantrum doesn't mean you need to give in to them and say, okay, you don't have to clean your room. You still got to clean your damn room. That's it.
There you go.
Thank you, Jay.
All right,
we'll check you out later on Thursday Night Football. Yep. Returns tonight. Deshaun Watson and the Texans take on the Dolphins. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, the NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined once again by Yahoo Sports writer and NBA insider Chris Haynes. Let's move to the NBA, where Steph Curry dropped 51 points in just three quarters last night as the Warriors routed the Wizards 144-122. At the moment, Curry's averaging 35 points per game, and the two-time MVP is already being asked about winning a third MVP.
If you think about guys that have won three, it would definitely be special and something that never thought I had an opportunity to go after, but it's more so just on a nightly basis, staying within myself and doing what I need to do. And again, those conversations will happen just like they did the first two times. And I want to give, you know, people a reason to notice what's going on for sure.
All right, look, we're just a week or two into the NBA season, but I think he is clearly the front runner for the MVP. I think the rule changes and the rule emphasis freed things up. I think I said it yesterday. Steph is going to score 70, 80 points this year in a game. It's going to happen. The rules are dictating it. The rules favor Steph. He's going to win a third MVP.
I don't think he's going to win it. Look, he's the favorite right now, but we all know that the MVP award is a traveling trophy. If not, Jordan would have won it every single year. There were times we were like, Kobe, why isn't he winning it every single year?
I never thought that, but go ahead.
Okay, respect. Whitlock has always been on the island. Now we have that verified. But look, there's going to be some Curry fatigue. Like, okay, we've seen this before. Is he going to do something different? And two, the more important reason, KD's on that team, bro. And look, KD has a brother by the name of Tony D. And Tony D gonna hit him, be like, hey, bro, go get your team back. hey, bro, you are an MVP yourself, two-time finals MVP. There's gonna be a moment where that baton won't be solely in Steph Curry's hand. KD's gonna say, stick, if y'all know track, stick. That means hand the baton back, bro. My turn to go out there and give you 50 plus. So I think that shared experience is gonna hurt him.
So you're saying that MVP award is a rolling stone?
Mm-hmm. You know what it is. You know what it is, like Papa.
Well, depending on who Papa. Well, not my Papa. But I will say this, I think, first of all, it's a handful of games in. We're talking MVP. That's just the nature of this business. But I will say this, Whitlock, don't sleep on that guy in the East, Kawhi Leonard over there in Toronto, he's doing over there.
Yeah,
they're undefeated as well. But I will say this. I do think if Steph continues to put up these type of numbers, I don't think this is sustainable, but put up high amount of numbers, then I think the MVP award will favor him because KD is on that team. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people felt like once KD came over, the MVP award would be vacant from Golden State during their run.
Yeah.
But if Steph can prove and show that he is still the face, which we all know, still the face of that team, the most prolific player on that roster, I think the award goes to him.
I don't think Steph's going to back up. I think he's going to average between 33 and 34 points a game just because they're scoring so many points in the NBA. I think Marcellus makes a fascinating point. I don't know if it's the one you're making, but I'm just wondering – if Steph does win a third MVP and reemerges himself as the clear face of Golden State, does that make it more likely that Kevin Durant bounces, or does it make it more likely he stays?
I love you and I hate you. I just heard you say the point that Marcellus made. I don't know if you're making that point, Marcellus. What the hell? Yeah, I made that point. KD is not going to let this happen on his watch, and it's not even in contention. It's not, you know, when you make a great point.
Does he stay?
I stay because I'm getting paid on my day off. Like, think about it. When he takes a night off, and that's not by effort, it's just by production, Steph goes for 51. He's like, we won. We did that. And then it's going to be my turn to do it. And Steph's like, all right, I'll give you 22. We won. We'll take that. That's how they won last year in a coasting effort. It was challenging in the playoffs, but that's just the formula for this team. And let's not act like we're new to the Steph Curry balling out of control conversation. Look at this full screen of who has the most 50-point games since 2012. James Harden, who we haven't brought up yet, but Steph Curry, 6. So for the new rules changes that you're talking about, Whitlock, we respect those, but Steph Curry's been doing this.
50 and three quarters. Get those stats.
Okay. Yeah, we ain't built that one yet. Yeah. A lot of prep needed for this show. Yeah. Not all
dedicated. Let's get that one. Does KD stay?
No. Does KD stay?
If Steph reemerges as the clear face MVP, I think it makes it more likely that KD leaves.
Look, I don't know if that would make it likely, but I will say this. KD doesn't owe Golden State anything. He went there. He wasn't. It's not like he was in OKC. This is a situation. I think, knowing KD how I know him, he's a sensitive guy. And he acknowledged and confirmed that he's a sensitive guy. You know, he's getting tired of people saying he rolled on the coattails, even though he was the reason why they did win those last two championships, finals MVP back-to-back. But I do think he's going to want a challenge. I do think he's going to want to prove doubters wrong, that he can lead a team. It just wasn't the right cards in OKC. Why are you looking at me like that?
Because you're not keeping it consistent.
Why not?
Say it with your chest. You said last week he going to the Knicks. Now,
I didn't say that.
I actually watched you on TV.
The Knicks. I'm the one.
You're
the only one. You that one guy, that rated. I said the Knicks will go after him. I said I think he will give them some time as far as a meeting.
Okay.
But I didn't say he'll go there.
Okay, but certainly you think next year, different uniform, just to prove I could be the one guy.
Marcellus, here, I do think we're looking at a different NBA with these rules, and there's so much offensive freedom. If I'm Kevin Durant after I win a third title, I'm like, man, let me go somewhere where I can enjoy all of this freedom. Because KD's a guy that if he had his own team, and under these circumstances, he might average 40.
Yeah.
He might put up some really unprecedented Wilt Chamberlain-like numbers that would elevate his status. I think it would make sense for him to move on. All right, to a guy who's won four MVPs, LeBron James, who got his first win as a member of the Lakers last night with L.A. dominating the Phoenix Suns in a game where seven Lakers scored in double figures. Afterwards, Lance Stephenson said that they had to get the W because Coach Luke Walton went off on the team during their pregame meeting. That, to me, is an interesting comment.
Yeah.
That, to me, says that Luke Walton's feeling a little heat, and he transferred that heat onto his own players.
Exactly. As we know, organizations don't fire the team. They fire the coach. And Luke's like, look, them 0-4 coaches don't have jobs. Do y'all remember Mike Brown when he came back to the Lakers? What was that, his second season? They started off 0-5. Yeah. He didn't get to 0-6. They were like, got to go, bro. Hey,
and David, don't forget about David Black, number one seed. Yeah. He's still out of
there. They got David off the seat. Look, once LeBron lands on your organization, and he lands on the organization, they call it the LeBronomy, man. The economy.
The LeBronomy.
Yeah, the economy changes with LeBron. Don't steal that. And so when he's there, there is pressure.
Yeah, no doubt.
Much is given, much is expected. LeBron has the ball, but Luke, you got to make it happen. And I think Luke felt it finally in that moment. He said, unleash, please, for
he
me.
He definitely did feel it. I'm glad. But that's good analysis right there, Marcel. That's the finest thing you ever said today. But I'll say this. You know, look at the lineup change you made, too. Wasn't I calling for? Yeah. I was calling for Josh Hart to get up in that spot. Look, all right. And Luke, just a week ago, said, it's too early. It's too premature to talk about start lineup change. He's clearly feeling the heat. That's what LeBron James provides. He provides heat. It can be good. It can be bad. But it depends on certain people you ask. You ask Mike Brown. You ask David Blatt. You know, they'll probably say something otherwise. But look, this is going to be – I know it's considered an evaluation year for the most part, but it's an evaluation year for the coach as well.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
primarily.
Yeah.
Because, again, LeBron ain't going anywhere, and all these pieces are pretty disposable. And so, yeah, I believe, like, LeBron was talking about patience after they started 0-3. But that may have been what he said publicly. Yeah. Looking at the way Luke Walton responded, like, LeBron might be saying that, but the way the organization feels, we can't be 0-4. We know the schedule gets a lot rougher after Phoenix. They got a difficult stretch here, and I love the Josh Hart move. And then the other thing I got to admit, and I got to go there, once again, Lonzo Ball. He threw up one Scud missile air ball, but other than that.
He good for that.
Other than that, Lonzo looked halfway decent.
He's selling them shoes. Ain't he selling them shoes?
I don't know if he's selling shoes. But if it's a game of Survivor, he's trying to survive.
Hey, man, I'm unapologetic. I love me some Ball Brand. Big Baller Brand, man. And my boy out there balling for these Lakers. I will go here. If you're Luke Walton, you have to stir it up any way you want to, because do not get deluded by this whole conversation of patience. It doesn't exist. I've been on rebuilding teams, and I've been on teams that, hey, we were fully loaded, expected. Expectations are always the same because they're still printing money. They're still selling tickets, and fans are not just trying to see their hard-earned money wasted. Mm-hmm. So you better go out there and ball, and I think that this Lakers team can do something this year. They're just trying to lower expectations.
They ain't internally, winning 54.
They're winning 50, though.
Just think about this. He cussed the team out before playing the Phoenix Suns.
Says a lot.
Says a lot.
Says a whole lot. All right, thank you, Chris.